Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13 As I mentioned last week, as we come to these chapters now, chapter 12, 13, and 14, prior to this we've been seeing the events that are taking place on the earth, the effects of the physical world during the tribulation period. And these chapters now seem to be giving us more of a spiritual insight as to what's taking place. The view is from heaven and some of the spiritual battle that's going on there. We got down to verse 3, but I'm going to start reading again in verse 1 just for us to get the context here. So Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1. He says, I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the names of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. So the beast comes out of the sea, but it's a beast given power by the dragon, which is Satan. Verse 3, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. These heads representing kings over kingdoms here. One of these kings dies, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast, who is able to make war with him? So he's mortally wounded, but then he's miraculously healed, brought back to life by the dragon. One of the biggest mistakes I think we Christians make is underestimating the power of Satan. Yes, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. But Satan's powerful. And that power seems to be unleashed almost without restraint during the tribulation period, as we see this beast here given life and coming back from to life from a deadly wound. And the result is that people begin to worship him. This unholy trinity here becomes an almost undefeatable force. Let's look at, keep your finger here, of course, but go to Zechariah and chapter 11. Zechariah chapter 11. Verse 17, Zechariah 11, verse 17. Woe to the idle shepherd that leaveth the flock. The sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean dried up, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. I believe that's a reference to this beast that we see here, this idle shepherd. And he's marred by this saying, but he comes back to life. Go to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. And he shall speak great words. Well, let's back up just a little bit. Verse 23, thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And the 10 horns out of his kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them. And he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given unto his hand until a time and times and the dividing of times. So these great words spoken against the Lord and the changing of times, and as we see, some of these things are taking place already in our world today, that things being just completely turned upside down. No, I don't believe Obama is the Antichrist, but he's a type. That doesn't make him the Antichrist, But he does fill some of the criteria. He's a wicked man. There's no question about that. But these things are taking place here. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Second Thessalonians 2 and verse 4. Starting verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means. For that day shall not come except there come falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So this beast coming to power, taking the place of God, receiving the worship of God. Displacing God is what's taking place here. Daniel chapter 11. Jump back there to Daniel again. Sorry, I should have told you to hang on to that for a second. Daniel 11, verse 20. Then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom. Within few days he shall be destroyed. The beast was killed, neither in anger nor in battle, and his estate shall stand up a vile person to whom shall they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. And after the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully. For he shall come up, and shall become strong with a small people. He shall enter peaceably even upon the fattest places of the provinces. And he shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. He shall scatter among them the prey and the spoil and riches. Yea, and he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds even for a time. Down to verse 31. And the arm shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, shall take away the daily sacrifice. So for the daily sacrifice of the temple to be taken away, it means it has to be reestablished, right? The temple doesn't even exist right now. So at some point between now and when this is taking place, the temple is rebuilt, the worship of it is reestablished, but then, as we read here, the thing is taken away. And they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate, and such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries, but the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many, yet they shall fall by the sword, and by flame, by captivity, and by spoil many days. And we've read about some of those instances. At one occasion, one-third of the earth's population is destroyed. Another occasion, one-fourth of the earth's population is destroyed. And when you put those two together, that's one-half of the earth's population. In just those two instances alone, is killed. There's more death than that. So it's going to be a horrible, awful bloodbath taking place. Verse 34, now when they shall fall, they shall be hoping with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flatteries. Notice how oftentimes this flattery thing keeps coming in here. And again, that's what we're seeing today. Our president gets up and he speaks his truth, which is truth for the present moment. It's all relative. It means absolutely nothing. It's just flatteries. It's what the people want to hear in that particular moment. But you go back and you track the things that he said, and none of them bear true. That's what the Antichrist will do. You know, again, I'm not saying he's the Antichrist. I don't believe he's the Antichrist. But he's preparing people for that. People have itching ears. They want to hear what they want to hear. And that's what he's going to give them. And we're seeing the precursor of that today. Verse 35, and some of them of understanding shall fall to try them, to purge, to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that that is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women. We're being set up, folks, with the same-sex marriage thing being made acceptable. Nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. And may the force be with you. And a god whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. So this beast that is, and I believe all these verses relate to that, this, he's mortally wounded, he's brought back to life, and in all these things, the worship of the people is focused upon him. He's the answer to all their problems. He is the one anointed. Questions or comments thus far? Verse 5, back in Revelation 13, verse 5. And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things. Some of the verses we looked at already apply maybe more to this or as much to this as they did before. But he's speaking great things and blasphemies, and power is given unto him to continue 42 months. So we've, even though we've covered some things up to this point, looking toward and near the end of the tribulation, at here now in chapter 13, we're backing up to the midpoint, the 3.5 year mark. He comes in, he breaks that covenant, verse 6, and he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell therein. So blasphemies flood from this one against God, against his name, against his tabernacle, and against heaven. Verse 7, and it was given on him to make war with the saints. Again, remember, the first 3.5 years of the tribulation is relatively peaceful. There's a covenant made with Israel. They've been allowed to rebuild the temple. The worship of the temple for the Jew has been restored for the first 3.5 years. But then he breaks that covenant. He came in with flatteries. He got the kingdom peaceably. But now he breaks that covenant. Now, as he's gotten the affection and the worship of the people, he makes war with the saints and overcome them, and power is given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. Everything begins to bust loose at the 3.5 year point. Verse 8, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life, the life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. There's that book. We, believers, are not present. I believe the rapture takes place before the tribulation begins. We have been taken out. These saints here are tribulation saints. They're those who were not taken in the rapture, and primarily they're Jewish. There are some Gentiles we talked about before, but the emphasis of God at this time is Israel, as he's bringing Israel back to himself. We looked at them being taken in chapter 12 into Petra, where God is pleading with them and trying to get the nation of Israel back to him. So these saints here are not Christians. The church, the body of Christ, has been taken out. We're a separate, we're a distinct, a unique entity that God is using. He's calling out now in this time in which we live to provoke Israel, the apple of God's eye, to jealousy, where he's going to bring her back to him. And now, so the war against the saints here is not Christians. It's these Jewish believers who have come to their Messiah now, and now they're suffering for that thing. But their names have been written in the book of life. And now those who haven't freely and easily turn their worship to this beast at this time. Questions or comments? Verse 9. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. Notice the emphasis here. You'll reap what you sow. And then he says the patience and faith. I believe this is a works plus faith salvation in this period of time. This thing comes up over and over and over again as we're looking at the book of Revelation. God deals with the Jews differently than he deals with the church. Again, we are a separate, we are distinct, we are a unique entity. We are the bride of Jesus Christ. God the Father has a bride. He divorced her in the Old Testament. Read the book of Hosea. That's what that's about. God wrote Israel a bill of divorcement in the book of Hosea. God's going to remarry his bride. We are the bride of Jesus Christ. And yes, I know Jesus Christ is God, but this is one of those distinctions that my finite mind can't figure out, that God separates us in this sense. And so this bride of God now is going to be brought back to him, and it's through faith and patience that they come to him. Verse 11, and behold, another beast coming up out of the earth. So the first beast in the first part of the chapter came out of the sea. This one comes out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. So it seems like the second beast, his primary purpose is just further to focus the attention to that first beast to get the people to worship him. Verse 13, and he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. Now, Moses and Elijah, as we've seen earlier in this study, I believe appear during the tribulation period. The precursor to that was the Mount of Transfiguration, where Moses and Elijah appeared there to Peter, James, and John, and Jesus. But they appear, they're the two witnesses that appear. They call fire down from heaven. Think about Moses when he was first on the earth. God gave him the rod. He cast the rod down, it became a serpent. He called Moses then to go before Pharaoh. And the first thing he did was cast down his rod, which became a serpent. And then what happened? The magicians seemingly duplicated what Moses had done. They imitated. Now, certainly Moses' rod then ate up the serpents of the magicians. The spiritual realm has power that sometimes we don't fully recognize. But it's being demonstrated here with these great wonders that this beast is capable of performing, even the calling down of fire from heaven. Now, Elijah did that in the Old Testament, and again, I believe does that in the tribulation period. But these, they mimic, they're imitators. They appear as angels of light, as 2 Corinthians chapter 11 tells us. And doing these great powers, verse 14, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. See, miracles aren't the end-all of proof of God's working. I remember many years ago hearing about, in the Philippines, they called him the surgeon of the rusty knife. Anybody ever heard of that before? And this guy, somebody would be ill, and this rusty old pocket knife, if I remember the story correctly, he would use and just cut them open and take their gallbladder out or whatever it was. No antiseptic, nothing sterile or about or anything, and just they'd be healed back up like that. Is that of God? Of course not. The spirit world has powers. And those things are going to be manifest possibly in a way that the world has yet to see these things being manifest. And it's all for the purpose of getting people to follow this beast and to worship him. Questions or comments thus far? Danny.
Some people think that this system is the revival of the Roman Empire and the beast, of course, is the leader of basically an emperor again or whatever. Is that what you think this could be?
Yes, that's what I believe it is, yes. And, you know, you connect it back with Daniel, and obviously Rome was the fourth beast that rose up out of Daniel, and of course the Roman Empire was never defeated. It was never conquered. It just basically dissipated. You know, the others previous to that were all, you know, the Babylonians were defeated by the Medo-Persians. The Medo-Persians were defeated by the Greeks, and the Greeks, of course, defeated by the Romans. But the Roman Empire was never defeated or conquered, and very unusual for that to happen, that world power like that, just to kind of dissolve away. But I believe it comes back again. And we get to chapter 17, and some of that, I think, becomes even more clear, and the connection there. We might even get to that in chapter 14. I'm not sure if I want to get into it there yet or not, but I doubt we'll even get that far tonight. Any other questions or comments? Jennifer.
Mm-hmm. Which, what do you do with the people that aren't Jewish that get saved? What are they? What group? Which bride are they? Or how do you do with that? Are they proselytes?
That would be my guess, and that's about all I can do is guess at that. I really don't have anything firm about that, but we know in the Old Testament, like in Acts chapter 1, it was Jews and proselytes that were there for the day of Pentecost. So I'm assuming that same type of thing carries over into the tribulation.
Why don't you believe there's Christians? That's a puzzle to me. I've never heard that before. So why don't you believe there's Christians in the tribulation?
Because the Christian is the church,
okay,
the bride of Christ, which is complete at the rapture. You see, yeah, let me think here. Well, let's try John 14. John 14, let not your heart, verse 1, let not your heart be troubled. Do you believe in God? Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. And the picture here is of the groom going away to prepare a place for his bride. So he ascends up into heaven. You know, he says, you're going to see me come in like manner as you've seen me ascend up into heaven there in Acts chapter 1. He goes and he's preparing a place for his bride. And when he gets the place ready, that's the rapture. You know, the bride gets raptured out, is taken to heaven. At that time, we're the church, the bride, is removed from heaven. And of course, you go to Revelation chapters 2 and 3. You've got the seven churches of the book of Revelation. Chapter 4, what do you get? A door is open in heaven. The voice and a trumpet come up hither. That's a rapture. From chapter 4 through chapter 19 of Revelation, the church is not mentioned one time, because we're taken out in chapter 4. And so the bride is taken to the Father's house. And in the Old Testament, or in the Jewish tradition, this is exactly what they would do. The husband would go, he'd prepare a place for his bride. When things were made ready, they would go, there'd be a procession. He would take her to the Father's house. There'd be that purifying, that preparation time. That's the judgment seat of Christ. While the tribulation is taking place on the earth, we are facing the judgment seat of Christ. The bride's being purified and made ready. After that is the marriage supper, Revelation 19. We come back with him in our robes of white, because now we've been made ready for the big celebration. And the marriage supper of the Lamb takes place on the earth at the end of the tribulation, Revelation chapter 19. That's when Jesus Christ comes back to set up his kingdom. So, does that help? Okay. Any other questions or comments? Let's look at 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 again. 2 Thessalonians 2. Second Thessalonians 2 and verse 8. And of course, this whole chapter is about the Antichrist and so forth. We've read a couple of verses here already. Verse 8, he says, and then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. And that's what he talked about in Revelation 13. He's given great power to do miracles, of power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. For this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. And this would maybe even go further to address your question there. Folks say, well, I believe what this is teaching is that we witness to people, we try to bring them to Christ. And those who have had an opportunity, have had the gospel presented to them, and reject it, I don't believe get saved. Look at that again. He talks about the power and lying, signs and lying wonders, verse 9, with all deceivableness of unrighteousness, verse 10, and then that perish because they received not the love of the truth that they might be saved. That's somebody that's rejected the gospel. So, while some of these movies have maybe been useful in bringing people to Christ, there's some false teaching in some of these movies, Left Behind series and so forth. And I'm not being critical. I understand their motive was to bring people to Christ. Right? It was not a theological dissertation. Okay, so I'll give them some grace on that thing. But the problem is I think it has confused people to some degree. So like in that one where the pilot, his wife and son, I think it was, got saved and then got raptured. And then supposedly he and a daughter, I think it is, get saved later on. It doesn't work that way. They knew and they received not the love of the truth. Verse 11, for this cause God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So for your friends, your loved ones, your co-workers, today is the day of salvation. That trumpet sounds, that angel shouts, they're done. If they've heard the gospel and rejected it, they're done. They don't get another chance. So Ben Jeffs. Yes.
They had chances. It doesn't mm-hmm. say believe presently. It says believed.
Mm-hmm.
So the believe not that adds credibility to the fact that they're not going to get. Mm-hmm. They had a chance. It's mm-hmm. over.
Yeah. And again, God's approach changes once the rapture takes place, because as Romans chapter 9, 10, and 11 talk about. We are being, today, now, we are being used of God to provoke Israel to jealousy, to try to bring Israel back to Him. That's our role. That's what God's doing with us. Because Israel rejected God, we got in. We got an opportunity because they rejected their Messiah when they had the first chance. And so now God's gathering this special group of people, the church, the bride of Christ, which He then takes out, and then His approach changes. We are saved by grace through faith. We've got a different gospel. I think it's in the next chapter. It talks about an angel speaking. Yeah, it's in chapter 14. It talks about the angels preaching. Well, let's just quick look at that. Verse 6 of chapter 14. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and every nation, and kindred, and tongue, and people. Who preaches our gospel? We do. Anybody, right? That's our responsibility. Whether myself as a pastor, you as an individual talking to some other individual, the gospel. Paul defined his gospel in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. The death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's not the everlasting gospel. The everlasting gospel is a different gospel. It's preached by an angel to those that dwell on the earth during the tribulation period. He says, verse 7 of chapter 14, saying with loud voice, fear God, give glory to Him, for the hour of judgment is come, and worship Him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. That's His message. Judgment's coming. Now, I understand there's some judgment in the gospel of the grace of God. But the main thrust of the gospel, the grace of God, is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ and the salvation, the forgiveness of sins that we have through the shed blood of Jesus Christ. This is a message of judgment. It's a different gospel, preached in a different period of time, a different dispensation, the dispensation of tribulation. And God's got a different purpose in the tribulation to bring the nation of Israel back to Him. He's purifying them. He's getting them ready.
It sounds like He's getting an opportunity to every kindred and tongue, Gentiles all mm-hmm. there too.
Yes, that the thrust is Israel, but He's not barring anyway. Just like in the Old Testament, the thrust was Israel, but the Gentiles, you know, you had Ruth, Rahab, Bathsheba, and who am I missing? Tamar. They were all Gentiles. The four women that are mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus Christ in Luke were all Gentile women. They weren't Jews. But they got in the lineage of Jesus Christ. God let them in. Those Gentiles. God always includes everybody, but He doesn't have a specific audience that He's addressing. That's the primary emphasis. Any other questions or comments?
The widow lady there that had the boy that died with Elijah.
The widow of Zarephath, was that?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Wasn't she a Gentile?
I think so. I'd have to check and make sure, but I think she was. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that she was, yeah.
And the crumbs fell from the table. Mm-hmm.
The Gentile woman said, you know, just give me the crumbs that the children reject. Yeah. So God's merciful. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Danny? I may not understand fully how it's going to work out, but I know God will be just in how He does it. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's true. And the sad thing is there's more and more people today that have never had a clear presentation of the gospel made to them. I mean, they might have heard of Jesus and Christians, but they really don't have any understanding. You know, we're living in a day when you're probably seeing at least the third generation that has grown up without an exposure to the gospel personally in our country. We need missionaries in America. That's what we're here for, folks. Any other questions or comments? So this beast out of the earth promotes the making of an image of the beast to further worship him. Go back again now to Revelation 13 and verse 15. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. So you got the beast that came out of the sea, who had a deadly wound and was brought back to life. Now this beast comes out of the earth and says, we need to make an image. And they have power to bring that image now to life. Something they fashioned with their own hands. The power to give life unto the image of the beast that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Well, isn't there a religion today that takes kind of that approach to things? Verse 16. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. And that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So if you don't worship the beast, you're done. And as proof of the worship of the beast, you got to get, you either take his name or his number. Had the mark, the name or the number of the beast. And again, we already see the stuff set up for that. I mean, you go through the grocery store and you pull out your card and you swipe it across there, as well as your groceries. And they've already talked about implanting us with chips and everything to, you know, make the cashless society so people can't steal from you, right? Oh, yeah, really. It's all in place. And, you know, I got saved in 1975. And I remembered hearing about some of that stuff then, this stuff then. And 23 years old, it was like, wow, that's wild stuff. I wonder how they're going to do that. We don't have to wonder anymore. It's all in place. Only he who now letteth will let. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. God's saying, it's not time yet. But when he puts his hand down, Katie bar the door, it's coming. They're going to see either the mark in the hand or the forehead, which is his name or his number. Any questions or comments? And the number is 6. Well, let's see, verse 18. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man. It's going to be tied to a man. And his number is 600, 66. Well, let's go ahead and do it. 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17. First Samuel chapter 17 and verse 4. And there went out a champion of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. There's a 6 associated with Goliath. Chapter 21 of 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel 21. Verse 20. And there was yet a battle in Gath, and there was a man of great stature that had on every hand 6 fingers, and on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number, and he also was born to the giant. A giant, 6 cubits. Who has 6 toes and 6 fingers on each hand and foot. 2 Chronicles 9. Second Chronicles chapter 9. Verse 13. Now the weight of the gold that came to Solomon 1 year was 666 talents of gold. What Solomon got every year, 660 talents of gold. Go to Ezra chapter 2. Ezra chapter 2. Verse 13. The children of Adonikam. You know what Adonikam means? Lord of the Rebellion. The children of Adonikam, 666. Interesting. Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3 and verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. The mark is the number of a man. 666. It's associated with a man. And you look at some of these men that that number is associated with, and there's some bad things about these men. Now, we don't have time to get into this tonight. I don't know if we'll get into it next week or not, but in Revelation chapter 17, just to kind of give you a preview, I believe it's Rome. I believe the harlot of Revelation 17 is Rome, the city set on the seven hills. Its colors are blue and purple, or scarlet, whatever they are anyway. And you go through that thing, and when we do get there, we'll do that. But it's interesting that the worn on the foreheads of all the popes is this inscription: Vicarius Filii Dei. And vicarius, you know what that means? In the place of. You know what Dei means? God. The Roman Pope believes he is God's representative on the earth. He takes God's place. Growing up as a Roman Catholic, that's what we're taught. That is God, in essence, is what they're saying. And you take this name, Vicarius Filii Dei, and if you, in Latin and in Greek letters, some letters have numbers associated with them. You know what I'm saying? Like Roman numerals, V and the X and the I and so forth. So you take the word, the Vicarius Filii Dei, you take all the letters out that have no number associated with them. You leave only the letters that have a number associated with them in that name that the Pope claims. Guess what they add up to? 666. The substitute of the Son of God. And what is the Antichrist? He sets himself up in the place of God. I believe the key to understanding or identifying the Antichrist is to watch Rome. Keep an eye on him. Now, some people today are trying to bring Islam into it, and there may be some association, but Rome's the key. The revived Roman Empire. The Roman Catholic Church. is a key to that thing. Questions or comments before we wrap it up tonight? Let's bow for prayer. Lord, there's so many things still about this that I certainly don't understand and maybe have not been clear about some things tonight. If I have an error, correct me. And may my error not cause some problem in the life of another individual. But Lord, I know that this stuff does not directly apply to any of us because I believe we're going to be gone before these events unfold. We'll be watching from heaven and seeing what's going on the earth here. God, if nothing else, may we be stirred to strive to snatch some souls from the burning while there still is time. And God, I pray for your mercy upon our country one more day. Whether or not we survive until the tribulation is, at least in my mind, a big question. God, help us as your people to adequately and represent you here and to be that light in this dark world that we need to be. And God, in all this, we thank you that you are a merciful and gracious God. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.